Westbrook, the lob, Gafford, the dunk, and there is a franchise-tying 24th assist.
I don't think about it. I actually just go out and have fun and hoop. At the end of the day, when my journey is done and I'm done playing basketball, I can look back and think about some of the crazy stat lines, the good, the bad, the ugly, and be thankful. I'm thankful for it all. I'm grateful.
Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet, live.
Who's that dude again?
Stan Norfleet.
I don't know that guy.
Live from Quail Hollow here in Charlotte on a beautiful, beautiful day with many beautiful people around here. We've got a lot to get into. We're going to get more into the ambiance, the event that we are out for the next 3 days. But that was Russell Westbrook.
Mm-hmm.
And
Brody.
Can I just tell you, I know that Russell Westbrook, to me, is the road not taken for the Charlotte Hornets.
Sure.
Gordon Hayward was the road you took. And you know, whether people want to give him credit or not, Gordon, when he's been on the court,
always looked good.
Has been worth his contract.
Mm-hmm.
When he's been on the court,
mm-hmm.
which was the conversation that you had. But I just continue to gain new respect for Russell Westbrook and the way he conducts himself and the way that this is a guy who has been so maligned because he is an inefficient player, because he is perceived as selfish, because he doesn't talk and act like people perceive that a basketball player or a leader should. But I kind of dug that. Like, this is a guy who, up until about 20 games ago, Washington fans were saying, we have the worst contract in the league after trading John Wall to Houston for him. And yet, Russell Westbrook, alongside Bradley Beal, is the reason that they are in the 10th spot in the Eastern Conference.
Right.
And Russell Westbrook's inefficient style of basketball next to Bradley Beal is working. And they're winning. And I'll be honest with you, of Charlotte, Indiana, and Washington, I don't want to see Washington if we could avoid it, because that team is playing hot basketball right now.
Well, it goes back to the conversation we were having. I'd rather play Washington than have to deal with Miami in a one-and-done scenario. I get it. Washington is on fire right now. They've won 13 of their last 16. Russ is shooting 44% from the field. And he's averaging 22 a game.
Just to push back on that real quick, Miami has not put three great games together at all this season.
Mm-hmm.
Talent-wise, yes, they are more talented than Washington is. But I've just seen so many dud games from Miami this year. I think that's who Miami is. I think last year we got this false sense of security that Miami's truly a contender and a killer in the Eastern Conference. And I don't know if it's Jimmy Buckets. I don't know if just some of the other guys have gotten old, or maybe Bam hasn't truly taken a full-fledged next step. I don't know what it is. They don't have the chemistry that they had down the stretch last year.
Mm.
Washington's playing with that chemistry. Again, this is all momentary, but I'm much more afraid of Washington right now, because I think they're playing together in a way that Miami has not consistently achieved.
I view the Hornets' greatest weakness is the painted area.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm much more afraid of Bam Adebayo and Jimmy's ability to get to the rim.
This is fair. Maybe.
Then again, Russ is going to get to the rim too, but he wants to get all those other people involved. My God, he had a career-high 24 assists to go with 21 rebounds the other night.
Maybe this is a better way to put it. I'd rather play Eastern Conference Game 1 knowing you have a loss behind you than I would rather play Washington in a one-off where you have to.
So you're assuming they would beat Miami in the scenario that you're highlighting right now. You're saying you've already beat. Oh, no, you lose to Miami.
Yes.
And you play the winner
of
9-10.
You have more chances.
I get you.
To get into the playoffs if you get in the 7-8 game.
I get you. I look at it as a tune-up. If you could take care of teams you should beat, whether that's Washington or Indiana, you should take care of both of those. But I understand your logic as well. To me, bringing it back to Brody, hey, look, and I heard, I think this conversation took place yesterday
mm-hmm.
or the day before on the Mac Attack. And it's just revisionist history. Westbrook and the Wizards and Bradley Beal are playing extremely well. Scott Brooks, I'll get to him momentarily. I'm not regretting the signing of Gordon Hayward, because mm-hmm. keep in mind, we know that Westbrook's contract is significantly higher than Gordon Hayward's, and I believe it's a year longer. Mm-hmm. I'm going off the top of my head.
I actually think it's a year shorter, but we're in it.
Sure. We got to remember, if Westbrook, if that deal gets done, they're not taking Melo at three.
Yeah.
It's either another pick or they're moving out of it. So the thing that I heard the most that I pushed back on was like, well, wait a minute. There's the assumption if Westbrook had been here, that would have been him and Melo.
So I do think it would have complicated LaMelo's development. So
I don't think he would have been here.
Either or. Mm-hmm. Whether it complicates it or you go somewhere else with a number three pick, mm-hmm. neither of those are situations I'm willing to risk for Russell Westbrook, even though you and I both wanted him. Right?
True, yeah.
So I'm glad it worked out. And I guess the easier way to put this is LaMelo and Gordon, for me, even with Gordon's health issues, I'll take that rather than Russ and Patrick Williams.
Now, that's easy to say now because we've seen LaMelo Ball has overachieved. Nobody thought he would do this. We pretty much thought if Gordon was healthy – he would do Gordon Hayward type stuff. Yeah. We've seen him for a decade in the league, essentially. You knew what that was going to be. Scott Brooks. And let me, before I get into it, let me say this. I think we all can agree. Between the two players, between the three players, Russell Westbrook is a greater player than Gordon Hayward and LaMelo Ball. I think that's safe to say.
Are we talking about, like, legacies?
Clearly LaMelo's just getting started. So I'm just saying, for what it is right now, Westbrook's the better player. When Scott Brooks says, and that's what jumped out at me, the comments he made a couple nights ago, the Wizards play Milwaukee tonight. He says that in his mind, Scott Brooks, who has now coached Russell Westbrook twice, they had him in OKC, he says Westbrook is the second greatest point guard in the history of the league. And it sent shockwaves through NBA Twitter, through all the shows. Look, Westbrook is a living, breathing legend, Hall of Famer. He's going to get in first ballot. He's a bad dude. But we haven't had this conversation, and it takes me to a guy. I'm going to put Westbrook and Cam in the same scenario. I'll get to that momentarily. Mm-hmm. But when you heard Scott Brooks say that, and then I'll come back to Westbrook-Cam, what did it make you think of when you heard Scott Brooks say that?
It was just a coach saying something.
Hyperbole.
Yeah. And like, because, again, it is how do you define point guard? Like, what else is – like, is Scott going to be like, well, no, he's the fourth best point guard of all time.
Now, he wasn't asked where Westbrook ranked. He volunteered the ranking.
And again, he's coached Russ for most of his career. Mm-hmm. I would venture to say that he feels – protective of Russ, considering how NBA Twitter has just said the guy sucks basically for a majority of his career or had issues with him. I think that for what Russ is a much better player than the comparison I'm about to make. But I agreed with the national crowd when everyone talked about Julian Edelman, when the conversation became, is he a Hall of Famer or no? Mm-hmm. That in some ways it did disservice to a really good NFL player who had had some special moments in NFL history.
Mostly in the postseason. Yeah.
Now, with Russ, he is a clear, sure Hall of Famer.
No doubt about that.
But when you ask, is he the second best point guard? No.
No, he's not.
No, unless you're trying to say just point guards, meaning that LeBron is a forward.
Yeah, correct.
Magic is a forward. Like
James Harden is a two.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
But even then, no, he's not the second best point guard. But by the way, it gets back to the conversation we had. Gordon Hayward and LaMelo could have been the right move for the Charlotte Hornets. Mm-hmm. And Russell Westbrook can still be balling out with Washington. We get into this either-or situation, right? And early on, when Washington was struggling and Russ didn't look like he fit in just yet, people were sending us stuff saying, you still want Russell Westbrook?
You and I, yeah, we got that. How about now?
In reality, what we saw is you could have gone down two roads. You could have taken the road you took with Gordon. You could have taken the road you took with Russ. Both of those roads are legitimate roads. Fortunately for us, Mitch Kupchak did choose properly. But I hope a lot of people who want to talk a lot of bleep about Brody, because this is I get the chance or I get the idea that Russell Westbrook has just become a really good family man.
And oh, just, he's a great dude.
And just a man of integrity.
Yeah,
and
no
I,
doubt.
Some of the things that I've heard him say this year.
His philanthropy, all of that.
Have hit me differently.
Mm.
And so for all those people who just want to line up to talk bleep about Brody, I can tell you Gordon Hayward has been fantastic here. Love Gordon. Love LaMelo. And I can also tell you, even though they're in the division, I respect the absolute hell out of what Russell Westbrook has done. By the way, the sound earlier in the segment, courtesy of NBC Sports Washington.
Nobody has played harder longer in this league since I've been watching than Russell Westbrook. That ain't me talking. I mean, certainly it's my eyeballs. But that is universally recognized throughout the league. Brody, every night, you're going to get it from all different vantage points. He's going to compete his you-know-what off. Here's why I come back to the Cam thing real quick. So you got to remember, you're talking to a man, and if Cam is healthy this year, I believe it's going to happen, he's going to have more rushing touchdowns. No, he's going to have more. He already has more rushing touchdowns. Cam's going to have more rushing yards than Vic and more passing yards for his career than Steve Young. To me, Cam Newton has Hall of Fame consideration because at that point, he will be the best dual threat quarterback we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
That's indisputable to me once we get there.
And I agree.
With an MVP and a Super Bowl appearance under his belt, to me, that's easy. Here's why I come to Russ, and this is where it's close to Cam. Is it possible that those two players just represent something statistically and stylistically that they're just kind of different? They just sit on a shelf,
mm-hmm.
and you just don't know what label to put on them. And I think that's specifically in this conversation what Russell Westbrook is dealing with. He's a Hall of Famer. But his greatness in terms of how he stacks to Stockton and Malone, to Stockton and to Isaiah Thomas and to Magic and, hell, even to Steph Curry. There's the question out there, is Westbrook better than Steph Curry?
Mm-hmm.
To the Chris Pauls of the world. I just think that gets lost because he's so different, because of his explosiveness, than all those other guys, just like Cam to the quarterback crop.
And I think it comes back to the idea that if we look at, again, in November, you and I were bring Russ here. No. We wanted the mint city uniforms. I was asking people in the Hornets uniforms or in the Hornets organization, can I get a mint city, a mint green Westbrook jersey? And they told me to go bleep myself about the fifth time I asked. And they should have. That's the way you do it. But we look at the way things have gone. Here's another way of looking at it. Russell Westbrook has lived up to this point, his contract and the trade that they made to get him.
Yes.
Gordon Hayward has, when he's on the court, which means that we're still not 100% that he has. If that's
I'm glad you ended it that way. Let's ask the real question. If we don't, and we know Gordon is out of the walk-in boot, thank God. If we don't see Gordon the rest of this regular season, was he worth the money in 2021 to you?
Yes. Yes, I actually do think so. He was – I don't think you're in a playoff spot right now if you don't have Gordon for those first 50 games. I really don't. I think Gordon – and I don't think people – you know, it's ironic that we're having this conversation about these two guys because I don't think people understand Russell Westbrook's true value because he's inefficient. I don't think that you're just average NBA fan. So I'm talking about NBA Twitter doesn't understand the value of Russell Westbrook because he's inefficient. I think the casual NBA fan doesn't understand the value of Gordon Hayward because he is efficient, because he's not flashy, because
he's not super athletic.
Because he and Russ are just the antithesis of each other in or who they've been in the NBA.
How they play, yeah. I like where you're going. I like that conversation. I know we're up against it, but I like that conversation.
704-570-9610. Russell Westbrook is balling in Washington.
Yeah, 44%, right now, 22 a night, yeah.
They have chosen the right time to peak, have the Washington Wizards. Would you be afraid of the Washington Wizards? If right now where the Hornets are, where the Wizards are, if you got them, whether it is the first game, East Game 1, or that second game where it's whoever loses is just out of the playoffs, do the Wizards scare you? They scare the bleep out of me. The NWS Power Rankings, when we come back, we're going to get into the positional groups in Carolina after the draft. Where does quarterback rank? That's next on Sports Radio FNC.
He's a day one starter. You know, we believe in competition. We have some veterans here that I would never put a young player over them. That being said, we know that he has the ability to come in and start from day one. So it'll be a good competition. You know, we feel like he is an elite corner. At what point did we lock in on him? I think as we went through this process, we had other players that we really liked as well, but we knew that he was a special, special player. And so we knew that he's a guy that, you know, for a defense last year that we did some good things on defense, but we struggled to get off the field on third down. Especially when Dante was hurt. If we have a healthy Dante Jackson, if we have J.C. Horn playing well, and then the veterans that we brought in free agency, you know, what was maybe a weakness last year can hopefully now be a strength.
Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet, live from Quail Hollow on a beautiful, beautiful May day here. Happy Cinco de Mayo. More like Drinko de Mayo. No? I'll go bleep myself.
A couple hours, yeah.
We just heard Matt Rhule there talk about J.C. Horn, and the reason why we played that, he was asked, you know, will J.C. Horn start this year? Will he start out as a starter? And there was a word in there that is going to lead us to our NWS Power Rankings theme today. And he talked about competition. They want to have competition across the entire roster. So I'm going to rank for everybody very quickly here the top 10 positional groups. It might be top 9. I don't know. Math is really tough here. The top positional groups for the Carolina Panthers. But I will be starting at the bottom. So I will rank them from least talented to most talented here.
All right, I follow.
And the question for you guys out there is, what positional groups on the Carolina Panthers after the draft, after free agency, what are the most talented positional groups for the Carolina Panthers? Number 9, I'm sorry to say it, it's quarterback. Sam Darnold was not good in New York. It's not about Sam Darnold or just about Sam Darnold. You don't have anything proven behind Sam Darnold either. Number 8, tight end. I love me some Dan Arnold more than I love me some Sam Darnold. But Tommy Tremble's a good talent. Ian Thomas has talent. Dan Arnold is tall. But beyond that, we just don't have a lot of proven in that room. Number 7, safety. We love Jeremy Chinn. Without Jeremy Chinn, this would easily be the weak spot of the Carolina Panthers. And when I say weak spot, they've got talent. They've got the Hartfields. They've got the Franklins. They've got the Kenny Robinsons. But they just, we don't know that they have a lot of proven depth there. Number 6, linebacker. Number 5, running back. Number 4, I'm jumping around. Number 3, excuse me, cornerback was 4. Number 3, wide receiver. Number 2, interior defensive line. And number 1, the most talented positional group on this roster, according to Nick Wilson, is the edge rushing group. So again, I'm going to riff through that. Quarterback at 9, tight ends at 8, safety at 7, linebacker at 6, running back at 5, cornerback at 4, wide receiver at 3, interior defensive line at 2, and edge rusher at 1. So now that I've thrown that out there, Stan, the question is, what do you think about the tops and bottoms of my rankings here?
Well, I'm intrigued that you completely left off offensive line, so you must mean they're worse than the quarterback room?
That was 10.
All right, so 10 is the offensive line. Okay.
Actually, you know what? Yes, that is 10.
Okay. We could have broken it down by interior or tackles, but that's fine. We'll make it offensive line as 10. All right. I agree with you from a talent standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
The tight end room is probably 10 for me. Mm-hmm. I do not love that tight end room.
What?
I don't see explosive athletes in the tight end room. Dan Arnold, to me, is not a TE1. He's a TE2.
I think I've actually uncovered the root of this. You are an Ian Thomas honk. You were most of last year.
No, I was cheering for Ian Thomas, mm-hmm. but he didn't show me what I needed to see.
This is all because Ian Thomas broke your heart.
Why,
it makes sense.
Why do you keep going with Ian Thomas? So, to me, I go tight end room probably first.
You're talking about least talent.
Least, number 10, yeah.
Okay. So for you, let's go to the opposite end, because then we'll work our way in between here.
The most talent on this roster, to me, is the interior defensive line.
That's interesting.
I love Daquan Jones. I love Derrick Brown. I like what what's his name? Oh, my goodness. It's leaving me now.
Big Snack.
No. Last year, Bravion Roy. I thought Bravion Roy had some really good minutes last year. Sounds like Davion Nixon is coming up with us. I want to talk about him. I really think he can add something as well. I feel good. We'll see what Hoskins has.
You continue to not say their name, Morgan Fox, either.
Morgan Fox is a guy I'm trying to decide what do I consider him more. I think we'll see more snaps of him on the edge than we may see him reduced.
I think he's the guy that replaces
F.A. Obata.
Obata.
But again, where will the majority of his snaps come from?
What I'll say about this is I think you're going to carry 10 defensive linemen because of the way that they have built this roster. And the thing about that I think you're still going to cut a good defensive lineman, right? Like, it might be Christian Miller, who sat out last year. It might be Big Snack, the seventh rounder out of Kentucky. But, like, there's not a lot of budge room. If you're a young guy at one of those positions trying to come in and make the roster, there's not a lot of budge in that
There's
spot.
Not a lot of snaps on the interior of that defensive line. I think they'll carry 9, which allows Morgan Fox to swing, drop him down if need to. So that's first for me, interior defensive line.
All right, guys, if you're just joining us, 704-570-9610, as we have the NWS Power Rankings. The question here is, what are the most and least talented positional groups for the Carolina Panthers? I got to say, in going through this, the top five were very, I don't want to say very tough, because I started putting things in tiers.
Right.
But, like, trying to decide between the running back room and the wide receiver room, like, I went with the wide receiver room because I think you have, as the third most talented team, because I think you have 4 legitimate, no questions asked, NFL receivers. I think DJ and Robbie are clear starters in the NFL.
No doubt.
I think Terrence Marshall has an absolute chance to be a clear and absolute starter.
I'm with you there.
And I think David Moore, the wide receiver, not the big and out of Grambling, mm-hmm. if he's your fourth wide receiver, that's a good position to be in. And by the way, that leaves Zylstra, Shy Smith, all the other young guys to fend for the final roster spot or two, which is exactly what you want. Just enough roster spot for you to go ahead and allow a young player to play his way into this team.
Kirkwood may make this team.
But I'll look at the running back spot. I mean, between CMC, Chuba, and Reggie Bonifin, like Rodney Smith, who I thought did very well in very limited action last year, considering the position he was put in, he looks to be an odd man out. So in both situations, I think you're going to leave NFL guys off your roster. That, to me, speaks of another level of depth that you didn't have last year when guys like Mike Davis got banged up.
Chuba's health and his fumbleitis is something that I'm going to keep my eye on. But since there are no games being played, I'm going to bump that running back room down. I disagree with your edge, but I need to know, are you considering Hassan Reddick a linebacker or an edge?
I consider him an edge.
All right. So
mostly because he's going to get after like his function on this team, much like Brian. I look at him as the Spider-Man clone of Brian Burns, as a guy who's a little bit more undersized, but your primary function on this roster is going to get to double-digit sacks for both those players.
I know Burns is a considerably better athlete than Reddick. Reddick is a little tight in his hips. Mm-hmm. He's a straight-line guy. Burns is certainly more twitchy.
I've not watched his hips enough.
All right, so if you're considering edge, Brian Burns, Itua Gross-Matos, Marquise Haynes,
Hassan Reddick.
And I'm going to bump that room to number 2 on my board.
Okay.
So I'm going interior 1, edge 2.
Can we just address this? So cornerbacks also top 4. So that should inform the way we think about this defense for me. If my top 3 of my top 4 positional groups on this roster are edge, interior defensive line, and cornerback, that tells you where my head is on what my expectations for this team are. And again, if you guys are just joining us, we are live from Quail Hollow at the Wells Fargo Championship. This is NWS Power Rankings, and we're ranking the Panthers' positional groups. What belongs on the opposite sides here? What is the most talented positional group? What is the least talented? Stan, you can...
Another question here. Do you consider Jeremy Chan a safety, or are you looking at him as a linebacker hybrid?
I considered him a safety.
That's what I did, too.
Mostly because I think once they signed Denzel Perryman and, to some level, Hassan Reddick, that guaranteed Jeremy's going to be playing a lot more of safety.
I like... Yeah. So I'm going interior defensive line one, edge two. I like that cornerback room. They get the three spot.
So you've said, I'm glad that you said that, because you've said you don't expect the defense to quote-unquote carry them, but the two most important places on the defense, the defensive line and the cornerback room, are clear strengths here.
They are strengths.
Then why wouldn't we expect the defense to lead here?
Because what you have ranked as number nine, I'm going to bump up to probably number five, the quarterback.
So that's about average.
So I think Sam at five and what they're going to be asked to do. Now, you have the offensive line at 10. I would probably bump that up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, in fairness, I have them at 10 because I forgot to include them. I have them ranked on my screen, but I didn't put
them
right.
So on your screen, where are they?
They're about 7. So they're still not great, but they're in between linebackers and safeties.
So the line, just the straight up linebacker room is Shaq Thompson, Denzel Perryman,
and Jermaine Carter.
Jermaine Carter, and maybe Frankie Louvoux. He's going to be more of a special teams guy. Patty Fisher is a undrafted guy.
Here's the thing.
The offensive line room is better than that linebacker room.
I disagree. I think you have more quality. You don't have as many dudes.
Yeah, I'm saying,
but
just
like,
the overall play.
You've got
Taylor Moten is better at his position than any linebacker I named.
Okay. Everybody after Taylor Moten is not better than any of the other linebackers.
So if we, and I haven't looked at the Pro Football Focus grades, I'm just going off the top here. Paradis probably ranked higher at starting center than Shaq Thompson did at linebacker.
I don't know about that, because I think Shaq had one of the better graded seasons this year.
I don't know. I'm just assuming somebody, well, I can't see the text line today, but I figured out at some point I'll look it up here momentarily. So really, I look at it this way. Your bad, your question marks, we share tight end as a question mark. I've got the O-line, but well, you've got them on your screen as 7. That's right. So you got quarterback as the worst room, the worst talent on the roster.
Yes.
I disagree with that.
And here's the thing. It's not about Sam. It's about what they have after Sam.
Sam.
And this leads into our conversation earlier. If you had put, and this is a terrible explanation, is a terrible example because he's a starter right now in the NFL, but if you had put a Ryan Fitzpatrick or some quarterback of that ilk, journeyman NFL player, if you had put him behind Sam Darnold right now, they'd be up there where I said the offensive line was, which is and maybe closer to where you have them.
That safety room still makes me a little nervous. So if you're asking me, Stan, who's going to perform better with everything that's at play? The safety room, Jeremy Chan going to safety full-time. I'm using my air quotes. Okay, I love Jeremy Chan. I just haven't seen him exclusively at safety.
I wonder if we're going to see some of these young corners also get cross-trained. And I look at Stanley Thomas Oliver. I look at Keith Taylor's obviously another guy that we've talked about. But the one thing I would say is Sam Franklin, when he was healthy last year, balled out.
He played well.
Okay.
Balled out means you're on some recognition, like you're on that next level. He played well in what they asked him to do. Justin Burris has had some injuries. I don't know that I'm comfortable with him exclusively as a starting strong safety.
704-570-9610. This is NWS Power Rankings with Nick Wilson and Stan Norfleet. What positional groups have the most and least talent for the Carolina Panthers? We'll put this up at Nick Wilson Says on the Diamonds Direct Twitter feed. But as we continue on, the Panthers talk continues on. And there were Matt Rhule's expectations for this season. And then there was a local media member who set a slightly lower bar. Sports Radio FNZ.
my goal, I mean, my life is that, you know, we want to be in contention every year to win the NFC South and go to the playoffs. And then when you get to the playoffs, you know, go try to make a run. And so, you know, we're in year two. You know, we're still pretty young. Can we do that? You know, we have to just not talk about it. We have to actually just go do it. But make no mistake, those are the expectations year in and year out, you know, to fight to win the NFC South, you know, to be in contention for it. And what I want is I want to come down the stretch in November and December into January being in contention. And, you know, we didn't do that last year. So let's take a step this year and get closer to that. So that's the expectation in our building, is that we're a team that is going to fight to make the playoffs and make a run every year. But you know what? Everyone has goals. So you know, goals are cheap. Talk is cheap. You know, we have to just put the work in and go do it.
Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. That was Matt Rhule from the clubhouse yesterday throwing out his relatively non-conditional expectations for 2021 for his young Panthers team. By the way, guys, Mecklenburg County Health Department wants you to know millions have been vaccinated. They are safe, effective, and free. Get the facts you need at mecnc.gov. But I think it's interesting that Matt Rhule removed the conditions. We talked about this a bit yesterday, that he removed the conditions because this is a town. And I say this in a good way. There's not the cynicism here, right? There is a growing cynicism about the Panthers after the way Cam Newton got handled and Ron Rivera. But like, when you compare the cynicism in Cleveland or Buffalo or Detroit, in places that have lost far more than they've won, and they, especially in the last 20 years, you don't have the kind of playoff moments that the Carolina Panthers have had, mm-hmm. even though they still feel few and far between for the Carolina Panthers. There isn't the kind of cynicism. So when Matt Rhule says that, what's different about here or Detroit, or what's different about here and Chicago, or whatever, you know, relatively bad organizations that have gone over the last 20 years,
mm-hmm.
is I think people are going to listen to that and say, all right, well, then that should be my expectation for it. And now that doesn't mean that's not what Matt should say, because I applaud him for having that kind of mentality. This is why we know, even if Sam Darnold were bad this year, they're not going to tank just to go ahead and get a quarterback, because that word does not seem to be in the vocabulary of Matt Rhule. But I throw that out there, and I throw that piece of sound from the clubhouse, which you and I talked about
mm-hmm.
yesterday, to go ahead and throw this one out. Josh Klein of the Riot Report was on the Mac Attack this morning, and I thought he did a very, very good job of throwing out, instead of just kind of a general expectation, playoffs or this or that, he threw out a very good comparison for the Carolina Panthers in 2021.
The way I look at it is, I think that the way that the Hornets season has gone is kind of a good marker for the way that you can hope to see from the Panthers, in that they have these young pieces. You want to see them coming together. Are they going to win every game? No. Are they going to have some frustrating mistakes? Yes. But if you can see the flashes, then you can say, hey, this is where they're going to be maybe next year.
So Matt Rhule said playoffs NFC South. That's the expectation every year. When you hear Josh Klein say the Hornets this year, what we've seen from them over the last, 63 games? No, 65 games. Is that a fair expectation, or is that maybe coming under the wire a little bit for our expectations in year two of Matt Rhule?
It's interesting, but there are still some similarities. Here's what I heard Josh Klein just say. Panthers should be better.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't hear him put a number on it, but better. And I know that bothers you, but let's continue to walk.
The only reason why it bugs me is it's not a solid target.
And you know why it can't be for me yet.
No, I know. But what I'm saying is, if that's all Matt Rhule said, I want to be better this year, well, that's a moving goalpost that you can move.
Sure. I like that he was definitive and gave us a destination to evaluate him by. What I heard Klein again say is, like the Hornets, this Hornets team this year is clearly better.
Mm-hmm.
Terry took his game to another level. Miles in the minutes he's had, especially as a starter, taking his game to a level. Melo was more than we thought he was this soon. Gordon Hayward was what we essentially signed him for when healthy. We could do that same exercise with the Hornets rosters and let us hope they're rookies. So I love that symmetry. I want to pose this to you. My expectation this season, and we'll see how the schedule lays out, if Matt Rhule, Joe Brady, and Phil Snow are who we think they are, with an extra spot for the second year in the playoffs in the NFC, these are the five teams that didn't make the playoffs the year before that made the playoffs this past season. The Rams improved their win total plus one. Tampa was plus four. We get it, Brady. Chicago got the seventh slot in the NFC East. They had the same record. Washington plus four. The Indianapolis Colts plus four. Cleveland plus five. What do a lot of those teams have in common? First-time head coaches. My expectations for this team with this roster would be to have a Hornets-type jump.
And I think it's important to define what that means, because while there are more playoff spots currently in the NBA than there are the NFL, even if we just – the Hornets are the seventh seed in the Eastern Conference.
No, you are correct.
So that would put them one spot out in the seven seed – or, sorry, in the seven-team NFC. Don't look at it that way.
The NBA is normally eight, so the Hornets would be in at eight.
Well, but so that's the point. If the Panthers are the eighth best team in the NFC this year, but all of those things, they've looked really good, and you see what's coming together, and it's a clear step forward. Whereas the Hornets make it because of the just absolute swath of teams that get into
the
playoffs.
Right, it's a higher percentage of teams that get in the league, yeah.
Are we still looking at that and saying, all right, we're going to back off Matt Rhule? This offseason, I did not back off Matt Rhule one bit.
Sure.
And I was a little bit disconcerted how many people did, and I'm talking specifically from the media side of the – I'll call out the own station. I thought there were a lot of people extending on this station Matt Rhule a line of credit that, quite frankly, I don't think he's earned yet. And I say that with all the love and respect to everybody we work with. But that's why when we talk about expectations, why I want to hear real expectations. I'm not doing this moving goalpost thing.
So for me, when the schedule comes out, I want to hear somebody ask him, Coach, look at the schedule. You've got your 90-plus dudes in the locker room. The roster isn't going to change a whole bunch between now and kickoff. The 99% of that team, of this team for 2021, is signed.
Now,
will be signed.
All of this being said, if we look at the eighth seed in the NFC last year, right, the team that just missed out on the playoffs, you're talking about, we now have to do the darn 17-game schedule. So,
yeah, but see, I'm not doing eighth over there equals eighth over here.
No, I'm not necessarily saying that. I think it's more just trying to find a point of reference. Minnesota was essentially the eighth seed last year. It was actually Arizona. Arizona went 8-8 and missed the playoffs.
If this team goes 500 next year, I will be underwhelmed. That's not a 500 roster.
It depends on the context.
It looks.
Yes. For instance, they could have been 500 this last year.
Which is my point.
And
they were a 500 roster this year.
Well, no. They played like a 500 team. I think talent-wise, they were what their record says they were.
And so, people are going to say the large part of that is C-Mac being out for 13 games.
Which, again, we can get into the value of running backs.
Sure, I'm with you on that.
But I think the point is, if at the end of this season we can say, all right, you're 8-8, and let's say we have a definitive answer on Sam Darnold in the affirmative. While I could have champagne wishes and caviar dreams, 8-8, and Sam Darnold has proven he isn't a slappy, meaning he's looked, because for that to happen, guys, he's going to have to look better over 17 games than he did at any point.
Sam Darnold's got to have a career year.
For what his career has been.
That's what I'm saying.
Point.
For him, it's going to be a career year.
Then that's absolutely a success.
Yes.
And because what we just said is not far off from what Matt Rhule said. Right? So, and by the way, you can't go 8-8 anymore. But if you're 9-8, or if you're 8-9, right? If you're one of those two records and you have a definitive, quality, good answer on Sam Darnold, guys, I'm willing to accept that. Now, the expectations for year three, okay, well, they're out there. But if they're, let's go to it. The New York Jets last year, if the New York Jets had had a good quarterback and good quarterback play across 16 games, the New York Jets defense, and they're not far off Washington. They would have been a playoff team.
I'm not with you on that.
Oh, no. What I'm talking about is in terms of the way they're built.
The way they were built before Jamal Adams and Mosley and all that.
Did I say the Jets?
You said the Jets.
I meant the Giants.
I'm sorry. Okay. I just think, okay, we're good now.
I communicate for a living. I'm very good at this.
The Giants. Okay.
The Giants in Washington, to me, are essentially the same team. They have great young defenses. They've got varying degrees of offensive line. They've got a couple offensive skill players. So the Washington took a step forward with a couple picks this year.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still going to come down to what's that quarterback. The only reason Giants weren't at least 500 last year was Daniel Jones.
Well, what they would say is what many in the Panthers fan base would say here and what the coaching staff would say. They didn't have Saquon. We didn't have C-Mac.
And I would say that if you watch to people who say that, Saquon's important. He's not so important that he could make up for a bad quarterback, and that's what Daniel Jones was. So I think that's what's going to be interesting, because I think the only way they end up where the Giants ended up, and the Giants were a one game off a playoff spot in a god-awful NFC East. The only reason they ended up off was the quarterback position, and I feel like, considering they haven't brought in a true backup for Sam Darnold, it feels like the Panthers could be in a similar situation this year if things go wrong. I want to throw that out there.
As I continue to read draft recaps and overall evaluations, and as well as way too early 2022 mock drafts and where the Panthers, Ryan Wilson, a guy that I like a lot, has the Panthers drafting again next year in the top 10, actually number 10 overall, which means that this regular season, from his vantage point, is not going to go well. And Ryan Wilson of CBS is not alone. There are others that feel like, and so I ask you the question, and some people may ask, I ask you, why do you think people have the Panthers slotted there?
Because I think Ryan specifically is going off what the Panthers were this last year. And I think I can go to the same thing. Bleacher Report has Carolina 27th in their power rankings. People are sleeping on the Panthers, and that's obviously, honestly, that's where people should be until the Panthers prove them otherwise. 704-570-9610 is a Hornets-type season, which is what Josh Klein of the Ryan Report threw out there for the Panthers, is a Hornets-type season. The bar for Carolina, fifth-round pick defensive tackle Davion Nixon joins us next on Sports Radio FNZ.